I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. Because of the wide-ranging public health concerns over coronavirus and COVID-19, we have decided to make all of our related news freely available to everyone and not subject to our regular subscription paywall. As you can imagine, news gathering during a time of crisis can be very hard work and stressful. If you're not a current subscriber, you can support our work by subscribing at theday.com/subscribe. If you are a subscriber, we thank you. At the time of this recording, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected more than 173,000 people across the globe, with more than 7,000 deaths. In the U.S., there have been 3,487 cases, with 68 deaths. In Connecticut, there have been a reported 41 cases, while in neighboring Massachusetts, there have been 164 cases, 21 in Rhode Island, and 669 in the state of New York. On Monday, Governor Lamont and the governors of New York and New Jersey announced jointly that restaurants, bars, movie theaters, and gyms in their states would close indefinitely starting at 8 p.m. on Monday. Shortly after that, Governor Lamont said that the Mashantucket, Pequot, and Mohican tribes had agreed to close their casinos until further notice. Also Monday, Lawrence and Memorial Hospital announced that they would be setting up an outdoor area to take samples for coronavirus testing. My colleague, reporter Brian Hallenbeck, and I met with L&M's chief medical officer, Dr. Oliver Mayorga, on Monday as hospital staff finished setting up the testing station in a parking lot near the hospital's main entrance. He talked to us about the hospital's preparations to face the pandemic and also answered some questions that our readers have submitted to us during our coronavirus coverage.
So, I was here earlier this morning.
Yeah, thanks for coming back again. I was pleased to hear it.
So, now, with the people that drive up, they have to get out of their car and go in under this sheltered area, yes. And the nurse will swab them, right?
Yes. It's still fairly.
They don't remain in their car.
That's right. It's still fairly quick. We're going to try it both ways. We're learning a lot throughout the nation on the best method to do this. There are some truly drive-through options, but there's some concern that the sample that you get is not as good as a nice controlled sample when you're sitting in a chair. And the testing itself can be noxious, meaning it's really uncomfortable, and it can cause you to sneeze and even gag, and it's better not to have that happen in your car.
It's like a Q-tip. Right?
It's a deep Q-tip, and one in the throat too, right in the back of your throat. So it's two Q-tips. Not just one. One's good, yeah. So it's two swabs.
But how long does that take?
Takes about 5 minutes for the actual, less than 5 minutes. Once we get really good at it, it might even be just a couple minutes. But a lot of it is directing and instructing the patient as they come in, because they do have to follow the directions and instructions so that we have a controlled setting in which to get the sample. So it's safe for them and it's safe for us.
Now, they have to have a doctor's order.
That's right.
For this to be taken. And once they get that, do they call and make an appointment?
Yes. Actually, we're going to have, that's right, we're going to have a one call line appointment line. So they get a doctor's appointment, and then the physician actually sends the order, faxes the order to the centralized number, and then I believe, and I'm not sure 100%, we will then connect with the patient and find a good time. Yeah, a good time, exactly.
And do you have any idea how many you can process, how many you can do? Are these,
we're going to
demand will be like?
Demand is very high.
It is.
I can answer that.
Demand,
we have calls from all over the area for people who feel like they would like to get tested. Part of the challenge has been there's been no options until now. And so the demand is high. We are going to start in a controlled fashion, but we expect to ramp up very quickly. We want to meet this demand.
What part of the state do you imagine that you're going to be serving? How big an area?
So we're focusing first locally in this region. Within the Yale New Haven Health System, though, we're opening multiple sites. And so by having a one call center, we may be able to better spread the demand out, although I actually think there's very high demand everywhere. So just today, we have approval for a site in Bridgeport and a site in New Haven.
Okay.
And so we are looking for this to be approved today, and we can start tomorrow. And then Westerly Hospital is next.
Are we going to have one there too?
Yes.
The swabs, the samples, they'll be sent where? Where is the actual testing done?
So right now that's a moving target nationally. As different labs expand their testing capabilities, we also look at the turnaround times, meaning the time it takes from sample collection to result, and that can vary by lab as well. So currently these samples will be sent to Quest, which is a national laboratory, which currently has turnaround times of approximately 4 days. So not very quick.
Now, people could become infected and before any symptoms, they're exhibiting any symptoms, right?
We are learning about the time period before they become symptomatic medically. There is certainly a period where there's something called viral shedding, where people can actually have virus coming from them. As to how that relates to infectivity is a little bit different. But what we do know is people who are exhibiting symptoms are definitely infectious. So we're focusing most of our education on recognizing symptoms in yourself or others. And at that point, if there's suspicion, also recognizing, even though we're opening this, it's not widespread availability and quick turnaround, so you still need to do the same things you would do without the test, which is essentially, you know, isolate yourself and practice social distancing, and honestly, get a lot of rest, eat well, try to exercise if you can, because like most viruses, an immune system that's healthy will fight this off, no problem.
You need to talk so more generally about L&M surge plan.
Mm-hmm.
What does that involve?
So there's different types of surges that we're looking for. When we're looking at outpatient management, that's one type of surge with people who are getting seen for low acuity symptoms or minor symptoms. Our plan to manage those is public communication. So thank you for being here. But if you are feeling okay, but you are sick, but you're not sick enough that you feel that you need the hospital, stay home. Absolutely stay home. You don't need to even go to see your doctor. You can call your doctor, but you don't need to come to the emergency department. Now, if you're feeling sick, really sick, yes, please come. That's when we need to see you. So we want to make sure that's actually loud and clear. Come to the ER if you are feeling ill enough to go to the ER. So,
serious health
correct. So those at high risk are those who have weakened immune systems and also the elderly. So generally those above 60, but there's really no specific criteria necessarily. Those with, as we say, heart disease, lung disease, diabetics, got to be very careful.
How many patients are you equipped to treat if this outbreak, you know, locally becomes severe?
So yeah, so you have your outpatient surge, and then you also have your inpatient surge. So people sick enough that actually have to come into the hospital. That is something that's being talked about nationally. Even internationally, you hear about what's going on in Italy when you run out of beds, when you run out of valuable resources like vents, like what you see here, those masks, those gowns, those are finite. And so we are very carefully monitoring our supplies of, it's called PPE, personal protective equipment. And we're being extraordinarily vigilant, but also using science so that we can actually use PPE longer than what had been traditionally recommended, but it's entirely safe as per the CDC. But we just can't afford to throw everything away after, you know, one single use. And then secondarily, there's things like bed capacity. We got plenty of beds at L&M and Westerly. We have 20 ICU beds.
20 ICU beds.
And plenty.
Between the two hospitals, or
this is just this hospital. One? Yeah, Westerly has probably has about 9, and we have more than enough vents for the moment. Ventilator machines. I can't give you the exact numbers, but we have enough. And so the next thing we're worried about or focused on is really staff health, because currently, if one of us gets exposed, there can be recommendations that you have to self-quarantine for 14 days. And if you take one doctor out, it can affect quite a bit of what you do. So we are looking at sharing physician provider resources across the health network. And as you probably know, Medicare has essentially allowed that this is a state of emergency nationally. And so they're waiving a lot of the requirements, a lot of the paperwork, I'll say, that used to be required to be able to move between states because of this emergency. So we're looking at that too.
So, but if there's a serious outbreak and you have to deal with more than 20, I mean, then you've got to convert.
We got more beds. Yes. We got more beds, yes. So we actually...
Is it a hard number, I guess, we're looking for?
What is your capacity?
We can manage anything we can manage. We have looked at vents that are primarily for transport. We can repurpose those. We have vents that we are bringing online that we are making sure that they work, and we will actually put those back into service. We can convert conference rooms into bed spaces. We can flow into a lot of different hospital wards that may not currently be used for those patients. So,
staff that'll be working out here, taking these swabs and everything, how will they be equipped? They'll all have the ventilators.
You mean ones that are working here? Yeah, they'll have the respirators. Yeah, they'll have respirators. Yeah, in gowns, as you can see. And gloves. Gloves. Yep. Very controlled process. It is an open air testing site, which is actually the safest way to do it because there's natural circulation. And that's why even though we have a tent covering, it's really just for the elements if it's raining. But you actually do want to do it out in the open. And so control of, you know, how patients come into the driveway is going to be very important. Communication, signage, all these things is what we're working on today.
So like the person drives up, they stop, they get out of their car to have the swab taken. Their car stays there, then they get back in their car and they move on, and it just moves around.
Okay. Yeah, actually, it can
be pretty quick if it's smooth. So,
maybe I've already asked you this. Is there a number you have in mind? How many people, how many tests, or how many swabs could you take in a day? What period do you plan to operate?
So, we're trying to shoot for a 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. We'll send some more information out. And then some limited hours on weekends, but we want to do weekend testing as well, too. And as to the number of tests, it really depends on our personnel and also the number of swabs and kits that we have access to. So we'll see.
Where do they come from,
these kits?
The kits actually come from different vendors. And so, and different labs use different kits. So I can't say 100% where our kits came from.
They're not on site, though. I mean, they come from...
Correct. Yeah, we're not making the reagents ourselves. The reagents are what actually help you run the test.
You get out the word to doctors.
If they give us approval, knock on wood, I'm going to send a blast out to local area primary physicians for how to actually access this. Like I said, it's very high demand. I think for the first couple of days, our challenge is going to be deciding who can come. Like I said, these are appointment only, so we'll work on it.
Now, what if we could run a couple of questions by that we get from our readers?
Sure.
So these are, I mean, some of these
you're
are...
You stay up here.
Oh, no,
I know
you're
good.
Okay. Some of these are probably questions that you've seen on social media, some dispelling of myths.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one here is, this person is concerned about how easily it is to transmit the virus, not by, you know, one-on-one interaction or touching, but through clothes or other things mm-hmm. that are being touched. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of bump elbows, pickup. Now schools are doing lunch pickups for families, mm-hmm. and so how safe can families feel about those kind of interactions?
So in general, coronaviruses transmit through droplets. And so just remember, if there's a droplet involved, it's highly transmissible. It's probably more transmissible than influenza. There's some back and forth about whether people believe that, but it is. But it doesn't just fly through the air. Although when you look at certain recommendations, some regulatory agencies still suggest that we should take extra precaution, which is called airborne precaution, versus droplet precautions. There are two different types. Droplet precautions, which is basically droplets, you definitely should be careful about. So if you're in an environment where someone is sneezing or coughing, That's an issue. If you're in a daycare, that's why they're cleaning all their surfaces, because someone could easily, you know, touch a handrail and you come and touch it, and then you touch your face and that's how you transmit it. So that's why the public service announcements of wash your hands often and do not touch your face. And by the way, stay 6 feet away from most people if you can, because you can't tell how sick someone is. That's exactly what you have to do. So
there are a couple of other questions here about how susceptible someone might be based on their current medical condition. So this person said that they had gallbladder surgery recently. There's another person that mentions high blood pressure. Can you talk to that at all?
Sure.
Can you?
So chronic medical conditions, but more specifically things like chronic lung diseases like emphysema, asthma, chronic bronchitis, people who have cardiac conditions, congestive heart failure can be at risk. Like I mentioned before, diabetes, uncontrolled diabetes in particular. Anyone with ongoing cancer treatment that can suppress your immune system. And so not all inclusive, but typically not just hypertension.
This is probably circulated around a bit too in social media. This idea that once you contract COVID-19 and recover, that you've gained some kind of immunity.
The science is catching up to that statement. We can't say with 100% certainty how that actually translates to reality. But it is being investigated as we speak.
This person says that they were hospitalized, tested negative. They want to know how accurate these tests are, if there's a need for a second test.
There's certain times where an additional test might be warranted, depending on symptoms. No test is 100%. Much of it is based on the test itself and also the sampling technique, which basically means what kind of sample did you get? Was it a good sample? Because the test is based in DNA technology, and so you actually need to have enough of this DNA RNA to test for. So, but all things being equal, the test is pretty good, but not 100%. I can't give you exact numbers, that I would share with the public right now.
This person apparently works with he or she says fragile people. So what's the how do you decide who gets tested? If this person were to work with elderly people, mm-hmm. would they have any ability to get tested ahead of other people?
I think it actually goes towards what your symptoms are. And so as we open more and more facilities like this, we can expand testing. Of course, we want to start first with the most at risk, and then of course we can triage the rest. So I would say first, you know, if you have symptoms, you really shouldn't be working around those at risk. And there is some consideration for assuming that you could have COVID, but understanding that the treatment is exactly the same, meaning go home and rest. So it's really about exposure. The testing doesn't actually change that.
And the last one, I think, is a general one about any myths that you are aware that are circulating on social media that you can dispel. This person in particular talks about holding your breath for 10 seconds and not coughing indicates that you do not have fibrosis of the lungs and therefore no COVID-19.
Yeah, I think that one is we can dispel that one. I have not been keeping up with social media. I'm sure there's many things out there. I'm trying to think. Well, there is one that I've been communicating with some folks, meaning you can't go outside. That's not true. Yes, it's safe to stay in your home, but you will probably get a little bit stir crazy if you don't go outside. So as long as you go outside, follow the social distancing protocols, it's actually okay to go for a run. Enjoy the weather when it's better than this. Get some sunlight. That's okay. Perhaps avoiding large gatherings, those things, that's coming from our public health agencies like Ledge Light. Church gatherings can be risky, any groups over 50. Within our hospital, actually, we've decided to limit in-person gatherings over actually probably 10 people, because we recognize that we could be vectors to each other. And so to the degree that you can control that, try to control that. All right, stay tuned. If you need anything else as this progresses, please let us know. I was telling Bill,
thank you very much.
Yeah, we have to be more out in public and
All right. Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We continue to take questions from our readers about the coronavirus and COVID-19. You can submit yours at theday.com/coronavirus questions. And subscribe to our coronavirus newsletter at theday.com/coronavirus updates.